Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. Hello, everyone. It's me. Sincerest of apologies for not getting this episode out on time. You guys know I was editing it on the plane to Utah, which I think was probably like a collective 4 hours, and I still didn't get through all of it. And then there was absolutely no time while I was at Silver Retreat in Utah, and I just got home yesterday, knocked this out today, and I'm just gonna publish it today because I don't want you guys to wait any longer. It is Ebby again, part two. You guys loved part one so much because I only got through one question that I wanted to ask her, and I wanted to ask the rest of the questions this episode, but guess what? I only got through one question again. I could talk to her for hours, and I did. The original unedited conversation was over 2 hours, but today we're talking about a topic that you've all highly requested and are highly interested in, and the reason that Ebby and I are friends, and that is the conversation of Jesus, spirituality, woo-woo, etc. It's a good one. As of right now, outside of this episode, I am in South Florida. We do have a hurricane coming. I do have a podcast recording tomorrow. That would be, what day is today? That would be Tuesday. The hurricane's hitting Tuesday night. So just a heads up, there is likely not going to be an episode out on Friday because I do not think, who knows what's going to happen with the power, but use that time to sit crisscross applesauce and chill out. Maybe re-listen to this one. Send us your prayers. And with that said, I know you're going to love this episode. Have fun. I think that what you're saying is something that a lot of mothers and new mothers need to hear right now.
Yeah.
The first question I asked Ebby was, if you're too tired, we can reschedule.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, definitely so tired because I'm, you know, we've got a toddler and then the 4-month-old going through definitely 4 months sleep regression. Might be teething. I don't know. Weird things are happening. And I'm just having one of those days where I said, Susie, like if it was any normal day, I would feel like it was a great day. But because I'm tired and the baby's crying when he isn't normally, I'm like questioning everything, you know, like, can I even do this? Is it dumb of me? I can't work and be a mom and whatever. And I'm, And yeah, that's totally normal. And Susie was like, I validate that, which is great. And I was just saying, like, I actually kind of was really happy to still show up here because it's not about like just performing when you feel good. You know, it's not about just like showing up when you're ready to be like, da 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 da, and like play a role of some kind of like perfectly polished person. I am just as valid and valuable if I'm sleepy. We're all sleepy, especially if we're moms. If we're moms, even if we're not moms, I was sleepy before I was a mom, you know? That's where I'm showing up from, like wholeheartedly, and so happy to be here, but also carrying like, oh man, like life today feels like, how do I do this?
Yeah, you're in the thick of it and you're speaking from the thick of it. And I'm grateful that you showed up today because in your vulnerable, sleep deprived, on edge state, you're going to be even more raw and authentic, which is what the people are here for. And the reason why you have a million followers on TikTok. Congratulations. I love it.
I thought that had happened a while ago, but then I just saw your video the other day while you were peeling a kiwi, and you're like, I don't know why you're all following me, but thanks. That was so authentic and wonderful. This is what the people want.
Give the people what they want.
It's kind of wild. Like I was actually just talking this morning with my brother has been helping me lately with some like back end practices, you know, some like editing and things like that. And he was like, you know, you don't have to keep proving yourself, right? And I was
Oh, that's
like,
so profound.
I know, big bro coming in with the words of wisdom. He was like, you've got like, and literally follower count doesn't matter. And I've always felt that way. And I've always just been like, sometimes I notice it and I'm like, oh, that's crazy to think about. Do to do, you know? And he's like, you've got a million people following you for a reason. Like you've already shown them who you are. You've already shown them like the quality of your work. Cause I was telling him as well, like, I'm tired and I don't really have anything fresh to edit or to do. Like, I don't know what I'm like doing the next couple of days, you know? And he was like, just sit back for a second. Just like chill. Stitch somebody on to be a normal TikToker. Like, calm down. He was like, you know, yeah, like you don't have to keep proving yourself. And you never do have to prove yourself. But I think that it's really interesting. Sorry, piggybacking. Similarly, my sister the other day said in regards to finances that she was told great advice. Set a number of like how much is enough? Like, what is your like, this will be my goal, but also enough for me to like really like live the lifestyle that I want. And then when you reach that, figure out how to do that with less time, right? And then if that's going well, adjust and whatever. But as in, because you can reach your goal and it will never be enough unless you've already framed in your mind, it's okay, this is enough. And I think it can feel really similarly in like social media with follower count. And even if you don't like, even if you're not a content creator, but you're just putting stuff out there and it's always like likes and interaction and whatever else, or even just getting validation from people around you. I think we're like, we have these areas in which we're hungry, you know, and we're always seeking like validation. Like, am I enough? Am I doing enough? Whether it's financially or whatever else. And sometimes just sitting back and telling yourself, like, no. I don't have to prove myself. Like, this is enough. It's enough. And that's okay. I can just exist for a minute.
I completely agree. As a content creator, there's a point where you may like, whether it's a video that goes viral or your profile grows and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And you're sending screenshots to your friends and you're like, oh my God, I'm famous. Feel free to use my name for clout. And then a couple of weeks later, you're like, why isn't it moving? And then you're comparing yourself and then you feel like you need to do more and try harder instead of realizing that all of those people came to you because of who you were before. So you just need to keep doing what you were doing before. And I also wanted to go back to what your brother said with you don't have to continue validating or
You have to prove.
proving yourself, and how you were like, well, I don't know what I'm doing the next couple of days. I've been there. As a content creator, when you want to make sure that your profile is active, and then you get into this scarcity mindset and you're like, well, if I don't post for the next couple of days, then people are going to lose interest. God forbid. Or if I'm not posting like, do I just post up like trash content and just like at least it's filling the algorithm or it's filling my profile? And you're uninspired, and then like that work becomes like actual work and not fun. I just wanted to remind you and anyone listening, like, as someone with a platform, I think there's a lot of value in saying what you just said and like taking days off, because people are following you because they look up to you, they're inspired by you. And when someone like you who has a platform announces, I'm taking a few days off for sabbatical, that gives other people permission to do the same. And usually the response is so positive.
Yeah, that is so true. That's good food for thought. Yeah, I'm like, okay, maybe like I'm like, I have to post this for this thing and this for that and blah blah, and then maybe I can take a few days off. I think it's true. That is really validating. Also, yeah, the reminder that it also gives permission for others.
Yeah, and also for you, like, if you're in this slug of, yeah, you have to post your stuff for brand deals and shit, but like, if you don't take that time away, you're going to lose your tapping into your creativity. There's my little piece of advice for you. What we are not going to do in this podcast is talk about birth or breastfeeding.
Pointed like the plague.
You know what's actually wonderful is that podcast came out and so many people were like, oh my God, I love her. I follow her too. We have a lot of overlapping followers and a handful of them have just had babies. I'm like, this is perfect. So sometimes God does what he needs to do and the Holy Spirit overtakes and speaks through me, and it's not the plan, but it's exactly what people need. So
amen. That is what I love to hear. Yes, I totally agree.
Well, sometimes I feel like when we allow ourselves, we're literally a channel for the messages God needs to send through us if we allow ourselves to be.
100%. Yeah, I think this is where like it gets so interesting, because like that whole God within us situation that I feel like is often like different people have different opinions about that. You know, it's one of those things that like churches divide over and religions divide over and all that kind of stuff. Well, it's blasphemy, I guess, to say like I am God, because I'm not God. However, I am a piece of God's divine inspiration, and I am eternal, for lack of a better, less creepy word. I'm able to host God's spirit here, you know, like we are very much the physical representation in a lot of ways of God, you know, like made in their image. And I think that downplaying that really does a disservice to who God is and who he created us to be, who they created us to be. I struggle calling God he sometimes.
I want to talk about that. I also struggle to call God he or she or they, because I don't think God is a human being with genitalia. You know, God is so beyond what we as humans can even conceptualize, which is why he gave us Jesus and which is why he gave us the Holy Spirit, because those are two aspects of him that we can actually wrap our heads around.
Right.
God, that's too big. We give God a pronoun to make it easier to wrap our heads around. And sure, we can say, yes, God the Father.
Mm-hmm.
Makes mm-hmm. sense. But I don't know. I have a lot of pastors in my family who might disagree, but I think that's also another, God the Father is another way for us as humans to relate to him, because we know what a father is. We know that a father is caring, yet we know that a father is also like going to keep you in line generally. And so it helps us bridge the divide between this big God existence and our human existence, and how can we have a relationship with that when we don't understand it. But if we can view it as father, okay, well, I know what a paternal figure is, and we can call him, well, that makes it a little bit more tangible. That makes it a little bit more approachable. And that makes God easier to have a relationship with. But is that, does God have XY chromosomes? I don't think so.
No, definitely not. And I think you're right on par there, Susie, because our tiny little human pea brains just really, really can't, like, if God was really comprehensible, then he wouldn't be believable as God, you know, as an eternal being that could be so far outside of us that could have created us, et cetera, you know. But as humans, we have to have words to put to things. I'm not so much one to, like, shun, you know, the words that have been put, like you said, like, I'll still say God the Father, whatever, yeah, because as humans, like, that's how we've come to know and understand, like, we have to have words for things, you know, that don't have words for them. That, like, it's part of how things come into existence almost, you know, once they're spoken in about and spoken into being. Like, you know, in the beginning was the word was with God. I don't know, like, I'm still trying to unpack that sometimes, but there's definitely an aspect of, like, when something is spoken and understood, then it is, like, real and tangible. And so we have to have a way to somehow speak of and tangibly wrap our heads around God. But I think even like a lot of the ways that we've come to picture God, eternity, heaven, hell, whatever, even through the Bible, which I truly like, I truly, truly believe that the Bible is sacred text. Truly. I believe that you have to believe all of it or none of it. Totally. It doesn't make sense to pick and choose. But I also do believe that there's plenty that can be misinterpreted, or even just like you get these images in your head about things because of the way that you've been conditioned. Like Marco Polo, right? When Marco Polo went to China, like Asia, from Italy in whatever the year was, it was like a bajillion. Let me see. I'm going to Google it really quick.
Okay.
Year. In 1260, okay? Yeah. Marco Polo.
A bajillion years ago.
He was traveling around the Mongol Empire, right? All the way through China and whatever, that whole area of the world. He wrote this book. Right, this fat book, and like he brought back this fat book to Italy, to the West, right? And in this book, he describes everything that he saw in that part of the world, which was so different than anything in Europe. There's this bit where like he's trying to describe an elephant.
I've never heard this, so I'm loving.
Okay, I'm trying to find. I can't find the specific recipe. Like the specific reference, but he described elephants and like rhinoceroses. He thought the Asian rhinoceros was a unicorn, okay, and he described it as such. And then in our mind, we think unicorn, we think a horse is very pretty, fairy tale, whatever. But then you think of a rhinoceros, and you're like, wait, is this what they were talking about for years and years when they talk about unicorns? Puts a totally different spin, right, on all kinds of stories. And similarly, right, like if you're just describing things in the best and closest way you possibly can for people to understand it with their context, it could really be taken a bunch of different ways. And the essence stays the same. The important things are still the same. It's still a four-legged creature with a horn on its face.
Yeah.
It's like totally different than like a rhino than a unicorn. And I often feel that way about our ideas about God and eternity, and just kind of the deep or wide inner workings of the universe. Like, how could we think that we can really begin to know and understand? And people divide over this. Like, people fight over it. There's wars over it. There's so much hatred over things like, you know, did God make the earth in 7 literal days, or was it a millennia? And evolution? I don't know, and I don't really give a fuck. Because ultimately, he made it.
Yeah,
I really think he made it. And he could have just as easily guided the creation. Like, if you think about, think about creation day, and everything's bloop, 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 like blooming up from the ground, bloop, and these animals coming up or whatever. Could it not as easily have been? And I don't honestly, like, I don't think it was bajillions of years, but whatever. Could it not have been? And could time not have moved differently then, and it moves differently now, you know, and like in the way that God was making it at the time, he orchestrated it all, and it was beautiful, and things kind of evolved as they were being created from one thing to another, and it was like a blink of an eye to him, and it's like millions of years to us. Perfect. It makes perfect sense. I don't care. He made it.
I don't even think we have time to get into the word that you used, which was evolve over time. Because that's going to get people way too heated. But this, I went to Catholic school. I'm a recovering Catholic. Are you?
No, ma'am. Good for you.
I was a Catholic. And even when I was in middle school talking to nuns in like 6th grade, I was like, 7 days. Yes, the same thing that you're saying. I'm not by saying I don't think it was days. I'm not negating the fact that it happened and that it was powerful. But in all honesty, I say this on my Instagram all the time and people think it's a joke, but it's not. Time is fake. We started measuring standard time in what, the 1800s, because of the invention of railroads. And before that, time was measured by the sun and still is. And that's totally fair. But at the end of the day, are you texting your friend?
No, I'm not. I'm looking at my toenail. I'm listening intently.
Okay. someone said, okay, when the sun is here, it's noon. And when the sun is there, it's evening. And when the sun is there, it's morning. And that makes a whole day. But how do we know that that's what God, which we just talked about, this huge, like, can't even conceptualize, who knows if that's what God was measuring it by? And let's also remember that, yes, the Bible was God-breathed, but it was also written by man that is fallible. And perhaps man put in 7 days because that's, again, easier for our brains to conceptualize.
Totally. Totally.
People living for hundreds of years. Maybe. But also, maybe time is fake. And it was just a really, really long time.
It's so true. I was about to say, like, and people lived for hundreds of years back then. But, like, literally, who knows? But there could be so many factors as to why they could have, or yep. could, or things were measured differently, everything. Just like you said, at the end of the day, does it change? That's where I always come back to. I'm like, does it change the core values, the core principles that I believe that are, like, who God is, why we're here, where we're going? There's these, like, foundational, yeah, like, I think everybody should have and should know, like, what are the foundations of what I believe? What, like, whatever you believe, even if you're like, I believe nothing, you still believe something. And it's worthwhile knowing, like, what is it? What are the foundations? Like, what are the things that, like, when I ask myself, like, the Socratic method, right? Like, keep asking why? What do I boil down to? Like, actually, these things are pretty immovable for me.
Yeah.
And that has really helped me a lot when I've had big questions or when I've gone through times of, like, major doubts, trauma, and struggle. Sometimes if you're, you know, just going through a lot, it can be really overwhelming sometimes to try and also be in, like, theological debate all the time, you know, where you're like, but what about the purpose of life? And sometimes I've just had to boil it down to, like, never mind. I just really believe that we were created by an intelligent and loving being, and that I have purpose in being here, that life as we know it now is fleeting, but life on a larger scale, real life, is eternal. Those are kind of the very, very basic. I do believe that God, this being, showed himself to us in a couple of really tangible ways, because it seems very clear that there is a relational aspect to life outside of just human-to-human connection. And I could probably go on, because by now there's also other things that are quite foundational for me. But at times in my life, it's been very boiled down to, like, really simple things, you know?
As a recovering Catholic, going off of your point, when I was introduced, and I'll ask you about your story in a second, and I'll share mine for people that don't know. But when I was in college, I was dating a boy whose family was a part of a church. And this is when I was getting, like, back in touch with, like, Jesus as a friend and someone to have a conversation with, instead of Jesus as religion, or, like, religion's a whole other topic. I do go to church. I was baptized by immersion. But, you know, Jesus is not Catholic, as not up, down, cross yourself, kneel, be quiet. You know, Jesus is not that. And I went to his family's church for a couple of times, and he had told me about a church split for the first time. The church split. And I'm like, one had a disagreement, and they just, and now I'm married to a pastor's son. His dad and his grandpa are pastors, and two of my brothers-in-law are pastors as well. I've heard about lots of church splits, and I'm like, why are you guys fighting over these simplistic and at the end of the day, don't matter, theological debates, pre-trib and post-trib?
Yeah.
I don't understand that, but churches split and fight over that. Does it matter?
Like, does it change way that you should in your day-to-day go about your relationship with God and with the world around you? No. I find it also insane.
I will still call myself an outsider because I'm comparing myself to my husband, and he, like, grew up in this, and I grew up Catholic and then spent some time away and explored a little bit and then came back to Jesus in college. And I I look at this and I point these things out and I'm like, and then I bring even more questions because, I mean, he may, yeah, sure, he may know more than I do, but I bring back questions that he is unable to see because he's never been outside of it. And so I see things like, Robbie, these people are arguing over such little things that it also makes me question everything else. I'm like, okay, if there's all these people that say they're Christians literally splitting their church over a disagreement in how to read like two verses of the Bible, then also maybe we should talk about all of the translations that the Bible has gone through, and also the fact that the Bible was developed by or written and compiled by man who may have been, yes, like inspired by the Spirit, but we're also human, and then thus we're also fallible. And like, let's also talk about the context that they compiled this Bible in and the cultural context. And let's also talk about like all of the books of the Bible that were left out, and the fact that the New Testament is like all written by Paul, and Paul never met Jesus. I have a big problem with Paul. I think he's great, but like, who never actually met Jesus, and like Mary Magdalene and Thomas, who both have gospels, were left out of that and knew him and walked with him and had relationship with him. And then it just spirals into all of these other questions that I have, which I'm trying to get my brother-in-law on a podcast. He's dope as hell and a pastor. It's very easy to...
Well, it's easy when you see people questioning over little things. It's easy to suddenly like to spiral and to be like, because there is so much that we can't fully grasp and fully understand, and that goes deep. And so it can be easy to be like, to get overwhelmed by that, I think. I personally have found I'm like, okay, well, there's still value in everything that I do understand enough to like hold me firm in these ways. And I've become very comfortable with the unknown and with the mystery of certain things that I'm like, you know what? Like, I'll find out one day, and it's fine. And it's interesting, fascinating to wonder, like, was it this way or was it that way? Are there things that we're going to find out that we were totally off base on? Totally. I'm sure that there's so many things, even probably some really basic seeming things, you know, that we're just totally off base on. And I think that there's grace for it. I think that there really is. And I think that, and maybe as a side note, I also think that the whole idea of like, oh, but there's grace, like, can be fully misused in terms of like, oh, I'm just going to do whatever, but like there's grace for it and it's fine. But I do think that it's worth becoming, yeah, comfortable with discomfort and with questions and with the unknown, because it seems that those big divides and the churches that get kind of weird, they go off on a weird tangent and you're like, where did you get this kind of theology? Like, what happened there? And the ones as well that just get really, really stale and like stuck in certain old ways, like it all boils down to an unwillingness to question. You know, an unwillingness to just like hold space and conversation for big ideas and imagination and questions. And God always held space for questions. God even encouraged like straight up disrespectful questioning. Sometimes, you know, like when it was Jacob wrestled with God. One of the brothers. There's those two sets of brothers. Jacob, I think it's Jacob.
I grew up as a Catholic, so I did not learn the Bible.
Oh, okay. So sorry. I grew up as a pastor's kid.
You're a parent.
I am PK. Yes, big time. I think it was Jacob, and people are going to laugh at me, I'm sure, because it's probably wrong, but literally wrestled with God, right? Like, he was struggling. He was out there, like, in the wilds, the wilderness. He'd had a lot of shit go wrong. And God was like, come at me, bro. And he was like, okay, God. And they, like, wrestled. And there's other times where like people question God and question Jesus. Jesus even questions God. Jesus questions the church. Jesus came into the temple and was like, you brood of vipers, you thieves, and whatever, because they were selling stuff and basically making money off people in the church, which I also have a major issue with in like Western church, whatever. Like, it's become such big business. And I'm like, it's so, so clear that that's not what this is supposed to be. So he was pissed. He was mad at what the church were doing. He questioned them big time. Not always to just be like, you're wrong. Sometimes to just be like, think. Like, he often asked people questions and got them to think. And people asked him questions. And he was never like, you disrespectful. Don't you know? I'm the son of God. Do what I say. No, he met people's questions. Oh, and he was really, really happy to. The whole like come to me like little children thing. Like kids ask so many questions. They have such big imaginations. They're always like, why? But what about this? What about that? And like that is how we're supposed to come to God. And I think that when we start getting to a place where out of fear, people shut down questions. They shut down any kind of inkling of individual thought. Like I think slowly over the years, the church has done this. And it's out of fear. And sometimes, well, sometimes out of like a power trip, but sometimes like particularly in like the parents that just will not talk to their daughter about sex because the culture is just purity, purity, purity. There is no room for boys, blah, blah, blah. It's out of fear, right? That there's no room for like, no, you just do this and you don't do anything else because we don't want you to make a mistake. It's out of like a loving fear, but still what it does, it ends a conversation. It creates lack of relationship. It puts like unattainable expectations on people. And that's not the best example all the time because, you know, like other things like alien. Like I think a healthy church, you should be able to talk to the pastor about like, what do you think about aliens? Is it possible? And even if the pastor thinks, no, I don't think it's possible, they should still be able to talk with you about it without it being like a personal putting their faith in jeopardy.
I've been trying to keep my mouth shut. That moment is what this is all. I wrote down three statements. The one was a while ago. I don't really know where I was going with this when I wrote it down, but you were like, sometimes these churches go off on tangents.
They get weird.
I'm not throwing Robbie under the bus or my brother-in-law. And like, maybe it's totally valid, but they're listening to this podcast called Haunted Cosmos. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's run by two pastors.
Okay.
They talk about do you know what horseshoe theory is?
Oh, I've heard about this. I feel like I listened to a podcast one time about it. Bye.
This is all coming to a point, I promise. So horseshoe theory is the fact that two very opposing belief systems, the extremists on each side actually end up being a lot closer. Robbie's listening to these two pastors and they're talking about how like fairies and Bigfoot and ghosts and aliens and like changelings, which are like fairies and changelings are all very woo-woo things that are like, Susie, you're a heretic. Not that I believe in fairies, but Robbie's like, fairies exist. They are demons. And I'm going off on tangents. Like, there's so many ways to view the world and view the word as humans.
Yeah.
These pastors, I mean, tangents a little bit, but these pastors are talking about these things. And I think that if that's allowed, I don't know. I don't know why I wrote that down. I think I just wanted to talk about how fairies exist.
Fairies exist. I just
they're out there.
No, I thought I would hear him say. I think that that's really valid. Well, it's kind of like two different things, but similar. Because you can either get to a weird place by asking no questions, right? By just being like, we do this because we've always done it. But then slowly over time, things kind of change. Right. And you end up with a lot of weird like rules and regulations that like, where did we get these from? And nobody's really questioning or really going back to the source. Right. Or you end up in a weird place by doing a lot of questioning. But I think that if you're doing so and you still have like, I think the key is that foundation, like what are my foundational beliefs and do these things like ultimately measure up against those? Are there like blatant places where like this is contradicted by my foundational beliefs, and that can kind of help you stay grounded during your exploration and questioning. And I think that there is an aspect to like maturity of faith in it, which is a hard one to talk about because you don't ever want to be like, you're just immature in your faith. Okay, I can think this, but you can't because you're not mature enough. But really, there is an aspect of that. 1 Corinthians 8, I think is what it is. And I was just looking at it to see. It's talking about food sacrificed to idols, right? And how this one church, I think, yeah, it was in, oh, Corinthians is in Corinth, obviously. But how, like, in Corinth, it was like a big temple city, right? There was a lot of
temple worship and things. I think it was a place where a lot of temples were worshipped through. I think it's like sex and like physical mutilation. I don't know. It's just intense, right? A lot of intense stuff going on. And so a lot of people coming to the church, coming to Christ in Corinth, were coming out of some like very intense beliefs, which is, again, like you said, why cultural context is so, so important, because things get taken out of context because they were spoken to a very specific group of people with a specific culture. And that changes for different books of the Bible, right? Depending on who they were being written to. This little part, chapter 8, is just talking about like how people were freaking out about whether people could eat food that had been previously sacrificed to an idol or not. Like, which I would think nowadays is kind of similar to maybe eating something that's halal. Or I don't know as much about kosher, but maybe similarly, I'm not sure. But like also very different, because the idols were, it was a very literal like sacrifice to an idol at a temple. And he's essentially saying like the idol, if you believe that there is one God, then the idol is not a God. So actually doesn't have any control in this situation, and actually is like fake. And so actually doesn't make any difference. And it's just meat, you know, it's like just food. So it's fine. But like not everybody knows this. And some people are still so accustomed to idols that when they eat this food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to an idol. And since their conscience is weak, since they're like, you know, like mental, their faith isn't like that strong yet, or not that mature yet, then they think of it as defiled. So then it does something within them. And then in that sense, it affects their faith. It would drive a wedge between them. And they're like, oh no, I'm eating this food sacrifice to idols. And he just kind of goes on to say, like, be careful that, like, you exercising your freedom doesn't cause an issue to other people. Because just because you might have the understanding and the context to go, like, actually, this isn't blasphemous, this isn't whatever, because I have this surrounding, like, context and maturity of faith that I know I can stand on, like, this food isn't sacrificed to idols. This is false. Let's say, like, you talked about crystals or something, right? Like, let's say something to do with crystals. And I think that there's a balance to be had there. But still, let's just say the general idea of a crystal being able to have some kind of calming energy, whatever. In a mature faith and understanding, with certain context, with certain information that you know about scientific things or whatever, you could easily say that. But if somebody over there doesn't have that context and understanding, and it's going to cause a huge issue for them, then be aware of that. And maybe just like take a step back and like keep it to yourself a little bit, you know? Yeah, it's like if anyone with a weak conscience sees you who have this knowledge eating in an idol's temple, won't he be emboldened to eat what has been sacrificed to idols? So then to that person, they're being emboldened. Oh, I can do this too. But going in without the context, without the understanding, without the like tools in their tool belt, without the weapons at their disposal, they're going in immaturely then to an area that is still a temple to another god. And you're almost like saying, welcome, come on in. But they're like, they don't have the tools. They're not equipped to be in that situation with discernment. It's hard sometimes to talk about some of these things because it brings up stuff like, yeah, maturity of faith and whatever. And it seems like you're playing favorites, you know, like, oh, you're not mature enough. Meh. You know, but it's not. It's just like genuinely like, if you aren't equipped with the discernment that you need to have, then it's probably better to just stay away, to hold a boundary. But that is also where then over the years, people start just holding boundaries, no questions asked, not inviting any kind of discussion on it. And that's where things get weird. And that's where people end up with a sort of watered down and less full experience of faith and life and spirituality or whatever, which I think is what drives a lot of people sometimes away from the church, because they get into it, they connect with the core values of what it is, and then they're like, something feels weird here, something feels off or empty, or I was chastised for something that I felt like was just me, or whatever it is. And it drives them away, rather than being a space that's open for like discussion, for big ideas and big thinking, and like really, really delving into life and all of its intricacies and intricacies of the spiritual, which we should be able to because we're equipped with the Holy Spirit, which is like the biggest discernment weapon you could have in your arsenal, right? So really a mature Christian should be the most equipped and should actually, I think, in mature faith, they should be welcoming, delving into things and using the weapons that are in their arsenal
because the world needs that. Like, we need people that are willing to go there and pull out the good stuff for everybody to learn from. That was a huge
No. That wasn't a tangent. God was speaking through you. I could tell because you were going off, girl. I'm sure you know where this is leading. I'm learning. It's just really hard for you and me to talk about anything in a succinct matter of time.
Yeah.
We can keep talking about Jesus.
We can talk about anything you want, baby girl.
That started with our tangent on fairies and Bigfoot. My next question.
Like, sorry, as a side note, when there's enough lore all across the world about the same things, like same but different, you've got to start thinking, like, why? They weren't communicating about this, and don't even get me started on the astronauts and cave painting situation, right?
I don't even know about that.
Have you never watched Ancient Aliens?
No.
Okay, then maybe this is just too much of a stoner show. It's one of those that there's just a billion episodes and it's always on randomly, but I would also go and put it on purposefully, like, you know, on the internet. Ancient Aliens. It's about, like, it literally is always just talking about the connection between, like, Egypt or Stonehenge, whatever, and aliens. And they always go pretty much the same way, where it's like, who knows? Let's find out. But also, who knows? We'll never know. But and they never really come to a conclusion, except for it's really interesting to see all these places across the world that have weird things where they're, like, perfectly lined up with the stars or whatever. And then there's also, like, different, like, there's hieroglyphs and whatever, and, like, cave paintings and different things, like, in different parts of the world that seem to show, like, aircraft and, like, astronaut-type-looking people. It's just very interesting, and I don't know why. Maybe time travel. Like, my dad has suggested, who's a pastor, hope I'm not dropping a minute here, but he suggested that what we think of as aliens are time travelers from the future. Like, at some point, they figure out how to, you know, fly faster than the speed of light, travel through time, and what people have thought of as aliens are just people time traveling from other times. Interesting thought, you know, like, I don't know, but interesting thought to hear. And I'm glad that he said that as a pastor.
Yes. Yes. It normalizes the question. So I have a lot of tangents to go on. So I'm just going to need you to listen. You need to take notes. You take notes on what I say. First thing that you said that I wanted to tap on was your willingness for questions and that there's grace for questions. I think. And then you also said right after that, within Christianity, there's a lot of fear. So then we don't want to ask questions. And then that dilutes the church, the core of the faith, the core of his word. And I so much am passionate about those two things. Asking questions, I think. And then, oh my God. And then I was like, I love asking questions. Like, all of the questions I asked you earlier, like, why aren't these books included in the Bible? Can we talk a little bit more about how these men are the ones that compiled the Bible in a certain cultural context? And, like, how much does it still apply? And also, like, why aren't we talking about how many times the Bible has been translated and how over the last hundreds of years it's been interpreted in a bajillion different ways and a bajillion different extremist ways? Like, at this point, I'm like, it gets to a point where I'm asking so many questions and I'm being turned down that I'm just like, all right, I give up. I'm just going to read the Bible and listen to the Holy Spirit, which I believe is my intuition, as my discernment, and come to my own conclusions. And then people are like, no, you can't do this. You can't do this alone. Not in terms of, like, being in church and community, but in terms of, like, learning Christianity. You can't do this alone. So then I ask the questions and then I'm shut down again. And then and I'm like, I know that God is not mad at me for asking these questions. And the fact that I'm asking questions means that I care. And right after you said that, it's also, as you said, important to identify spiritual maturity. I'm sitting here as a content creator who really, really, really wants to bridge the gap between spirituality and Christianity and what's commonly deemed as woo-woo and Christianity, because all of these woo-woo practices are what brought me closer to my relationship with Jesus. At the same time, they coincided. Of course, like, there are things that I draw the line at and that I just don't feel comfortable with. Then you say it's important to consider spiritual maturity. And I'm like, well, I want to be authentic on social media. And I know I have a large platform. And I know that, let's pause really quickly because I want to make sure we get this story out. Can you tell me how you found me?
Oh, yeah. I think it was specifically on a post that I made called Maybe the Woo Woo Gospel.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I made a couple of posts like a long time ago talking about sort of like faith and hippiness because it had a lot of questions about it. And I think I posted something about crystals and people were asking about it. I made a couple of posts talking similar things to what we've been talking about here, you know? And I think that was where people started to tag you and they were like, I feel like you two would really get along, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to your page and it was literally like, I love God, but I'm also a little woo-woo. And I was like, oh, same.
Probably likely around the same time. While I'm asking these questions, I post, what was I saying? I knew this was going to happen. As someone with a social media following, I want to talk about the fact that it's okay to be a little woo-woo and also love Jesus. Because a lot of these woo-woo practices that I still have, which are crystals, essential oils, meditating, following the cycles of the moon, they all ultimately brought me closer. They were like, they really solidified my relationship with Jesus right after college. And some of my most potent experiences, like tangible physical experiences that brought me to tears of feeling the presence of the Holy Spirit, I was doing woo-woo shit when I was having these really deep, transformational experiences. And I posted a series. And it's hard to have a social media following where I want to be someone who releases other Christians from Christian fear and allows them to practice Christianity in a way that I do that's been shunned, where on the surface, people are like, you're a heretic. But when I explain myself, they're like, oh, that makes sense. And so you were probably tagged in my videos where I posted a 6-part series on Instagram where I explained how woo-woo and Christianity can coexist.
Yeah.
Crystals, all over the Bible. Meditating, all over the Bible. Herbalism.
Signs in the stars and the heavens.
And the moon phases. Like, these are all... And I was... That was wonderful because so many people messaged me and were like, I'm curious about this. But I never thought that I could look into it because I was always told that this was demonic. Now that you've posted this, I do feel free to explore this because the truth is I do feel closer to God when I do these things. Yeah. And so that was wonderful. But there are also people that are calling me a heretic. And then I'm like, okay, well, obviously me being vulnerable is helping a lot of people. But I struggle because, and I haven't been posting a lot of like Christian and woo-woo content like at all because it's very scary.
Yeah, it is. I don't think a lot.
See, like people will come at you and not listen to you or not want to engage in conversation. But it's scary to post that. But also you have to balance like, yeah, there are people following me that are also new on their journey with Jesus and might take this the completely wrong way. But I also want to present myself and present the questions that I have. Like, I'm solid in my faith. I know. We talked about this earlier. What are the foundations of our faith? God made a son that was a human form who lived a perfect life, who ultimately was the perfect sacrifice to undo all the shit of the Old Testament and make all of the future of us free and available to have a relationship with him and choose and have a direct relationship with God and be absolved from all of our sins so that we can live in eternal happiness with him and joy. Like, yeah, that's the base of it. But, and I believe that, but I still have some questions and that's not wrong. And I want to share those questions, because I think it's important for us to share that people who are still strong in their faith can also have questions, and Jesus has time for that. And that doesn't mean I don't believe in God. That doesn't mean I don't believe in the sacrifice of Jesus. It just means that I'm a human trying to figure things out because I want to have a relationship with Christ. And the fact that I'm questioning just means that I'm taking it seriously. But then I also know there are people following me who might take my questions and be like, oh, okay, so Christianity is a sham. Okay, so it doesn't make sense. Instead of actually doing their own research. So then I'm put in a bind where I want to be a voice that sparks conversations and meaningful conversations, but I don't want to cause people to stray. And I want to cause people to come closer to Christ, but I don't know where that balance is.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I think it's like, ultimately, it's a balance that you can't strike in like a 60-second video is part of the struggle. You know, like discipleship is such an important part of faith. No, I think no matter what your faith is, but particularly like faith in Jesus has always been very communal. And I think it's something that we need elders on, you know, we need like wisdom of others. We need sounding boards, you know, people we can talk with. And you can't really disciple someone through a TikTok as much as you would like to. So I think it is kind of like you said, like sparking interest, like encouraging, like research for yourself, like look into your own things, knowing where to pull back, maybe creating spaces that can be more discipleship, like a podcast, you know, like that's amazing. Or like other ways that you can kind of delve deeper. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of stuff that I hold back on sharing sometimes because I'm like, I don't think that I can do this justice of explain this properly so that there's no confusion in like a couple of minutes. And it's not my responsibility to, but will I be upset if people take me wrong? Yeah, because it's actually something really close to my heart. There's a lot of times that I'm like, that's fine. Like you can make fun of me, talk like whatever, talk shit in the comments. Like I'm fine with that. It's happened so much at this point that I'm like so numb to it. But if it's about faith and if it comes to something where like people either believe I'm leading people astray or where people are being like misconstruing something, that's like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to be responsible for that. So it is challenging because I think it is important for these gaps to be bridged. And I think this is why it's often not, because it's scary and because it's serious, because it does matter. And like the fact of the matter is a lot of these things that have been labeled as demonic or whatever else are practices that in a sense have been stolen and put to use by other spiritual strengths. As in, there are other spiritual forces at work in the world, right? And that is very, very real. Very, very true. And in a sense, out of fear for like getting tangled up in those spiritual forces, oftentimes organized Christianity is like, oh my God, stay away from this thing. But it's like, okay, well, but that thing is like very real. It can also be used for like some nefarious spiritual shit. Yeah. Totally, you know? And you don't want to get into that. And there's stuff that's very clear in the Bible. Don't try and talk to dead people. You know why? Because it's probably possible, or not actually possible, but you'll probably end up talking to demonic forces. I totally believe that. Like, I believe in, like, I don't know if I believe in ghosts. I think I believe in like leftover energy.
Yeah.
You know, like that like goes on a loop or whatever. But when people are like I used to watch a lot of ghost adventures and all that kind of stuff, like the ghost hunting things. My husband still does all the time. And there's something that's like changed in me, particularly since becoming a mom. I find it so much harder to, I just can't in the same way. And even having it on in the house, sometimes I'm like, dude, like, I don't really like this. I don't like this energy, honestly, because it's real, but not in the way that people think. Like, I don't think people are just talking to like their grandma. I think there are like other spiritual forces that take advantage, and that's really possible. And so I think like the Bible specifically says like don't try and talk to the dead. I don't know, maybe you can talk to the dead and you just shouldn't, or maybe it's because we'll end up talking to demonic forces and thinking it's the dead and we'll get like confused and whatever. It's a clear point. Fine. I will not try and talk to dead people, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm like, okay with that. Cool. You have to acknowledge it and know that like, okay, that is real. Like, there are spirits. You can talk to them. Like, you can communicate with them, you can feel them, you can sense them. At the very basic, I think a lot of Christians do believe that, you know, like a lot of Christians would say demons and angels or whatever exist. Some don't. Some are like, shut it down. Any talk of anything spirity, shut it down. And I find that insane. But then you go further to things like the stars and the moon and all that kind of stuff. And there are a lot of people who very surface level, like immediately will be like, nope. And I get it, because there are plenty of like practices that genuinely, I think, call upon the power of like spiritual forces that are not God in those practices that also work with stars, moon, all of these things, because there's some kind of reality there. There's like a real spiritual connection through those things. And you can either connect spiritually to something negative that is using that, that is taking and using this thing as a way to like get to humans, or you can use it in the way that it was intended, as something that should point you to and inspire you towards God, and that should like inspire your relationship with him. And that always, one of the markers for me is like, does it point me to Jesus? Like, does it point me to God, or does it point me to this thing or to myself? Like, that's one of the biggest things too. Like, when something like is just really like stroking your ego and like really making you, it's about you. It's all like inward focused, me, 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 me. What's on my cards? Tell me about my, like my. That's like also another good marker of like, this might not be doing what it should be doing. This might be using something in a way that's not glorifying to God, and like leaves then room for darker forces, because they prey upon our ego. They prey upon our insecurities. They prey upon our desire to be in control. If you're like actually knowing like the moon's phases and like knowing how that affects me and whatever, actually kind of like makes me worship God more. It's really amazing how intricate that he made the universe and made us. It's really cool being able to change a little bit how I decide to worship dependent on what's happening in the stars and what's happening in the seasons, whatever, you know, and it points you towards God. And I think that that's a real key.
A lot of this stuff has been fear-based. Christianity sometimes has become fear-based. And I get it.
Yeah.
And I say there's real applications that are sometimes nefarious for a lot of these. For sure. I'm half Cuban. And my family came over from Cuba. And they practiced Santeria. And so they switched over to Baptist.
Is that the chicken sacrificing?
They definitely sacrificed some chickens. A dove?
What?
A dove. And it works. I know. It works. And like, okay, so there's like this story my mom tells me. Unfortunately, my grandparents, my abuela passed away before I was born. I was named after her, and my abuelo passed away after I was a few years old. My grandfather on my mom's side was Cuban mafia, like in jail. I don't remember if the story was he was out of jail and then was convicted of something else with cocaine or what it was, but he was on trial, and my abuela went to a bruja, a witch, who practiced Santeria in Miami, Florida, and asked for a dove, sacrificed the dove, and of the four men that were on trial, who all had equal amounts of evidence, my abuelo was the only one that was off, that was able to take. So like, I had a cousin that was exorcised. There are plenty of stories in my family of people showing up and like blankets being taken off in the middle of the night. It's real. I know that it's, and they all like converted Baptist.
I need protection.
Yeah. So I'm all of this to say, yeah, it's so real. And I can see how someone can see someone like me and be like, oh, those people also use crystals. They also burn herbs when they do stuff. They also will do shit under the full moon. Yes, but that is a co-option of what it actually is. And when people are actually willing to engage in conversation with me and ask me those questions, I always revert back to, okay, when I'm looking at all of this spiritual stuff as a Christian, I ask myself, all right, What did God give to us? He gave us his word in the Bible. He gave us the Holy Spirit when we accept him as our Savior. He gave us the earth and everything that comes in it. And I think that the earth, we strip away all of these worldly things. And so I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, herbalism and herbal medicine. That was put here for our benefit to live the full and abundant lives that he wanted. Crystals? Yeah, they come in rocks. Do I think they work magic? Like people say, I don't know, assume that they do. I don't think they work magic, but I think God created something cool in the fact that crystals are the only naturally occurring element on earth whose atoms and molecules move in a perfect crystal lattice pattern, and that our molecules mirror that when we're near them, and then our bodies can work in more harmony. I think it's badass that colors have frequencies that our bodies respond to, and so therefore crystals from rocks, which again are all over the Bible, have some kind of effect on us, and in the very least can sit on our desk and can serve as a reminder. I think it's badass that women's bodies, when we spend enough time outside and aren't using hormonal birth control, our periods sync up with the moon. I just got my period.
It's supposed to just ignore that?
Right. Like, I got my period today. The new moon is tomorrow. Okay. That's like powerful shit. And the moon, we're going into a new moon. New moons represent new beginnings. Like, that's a fun reminder to be like, okay, what are my goals for the next 4 weeks?
Right.
What am I changing? What's working well? What's not working well? And it also, in following the cycles of the moon and the seasons, we're more in tune with actual nature, which we have been pulled from in modern society, which has so many negative effects on our overall physical and mental health and well-being. And so I'm like, yeah, is this considered woo-woo these days? Totally. But is it against God and his word?
Right.
No, the way that I'm using it, it's bringing me closer to him. And in my opinion, his design for how he wanted me to live my life.
A key point these days, you know, like I think because we are so disconnected from nature now, like we have to be so intentional about it that sometimes it seems strange. There is increasing amounts of science behind all of this stuff. It's a mixture of, like, well, I think the good use of it, like things like the moon and stars and crystals and whatever, is a mixture of just reminders for us. Like all through the Bible, things are marked with like, there will be this kind of moon and then that kind of moon. And after five of these whatevers and the stars do this, like it's markers or reminders for certain like events and occasions and days or whatever. So it's like half that, and it's half like energetics are real. There's so much more study now into energy and what it does. And like, even sometimes when you start talking about energy, people think that it's really woo-woo, but it's not. It's like all of these things are so very scientific, and where there's gaps in the science, to me, that is where God fills. God fills in, like with crystals and with frequencies and all of that. There's a lot of science behind it. Yeah, the science goes so far, and then there's a bit of a X factor that like, but we don't exactly know why it seems to have this effect. And it's like, to me, that's where God's spirit ties it all together. You know, that it like puzzle piece fits perfectly together. People often are like, how do you marry like science and faith together? I'm like, what do you mean how? Like it goes together so perfectly. And something that I unfortunately do not have the facts to back up right now, because I never remember like names and dates and places and stuff. But a lot of really, really great, incredible scientists have been like firm believers, have had like firm foundations in faith, or have become so in their scientific study, because they just go so well together. Because there's so many places where it comes to a point and you're like, well, that was God. And I truly think, I'm kind of going back over some of my notes of what you said. But yeah, like nature 100% serves to bring us closer to God. Like the skies declare the glory of God, you know? And like, if nobody worships, God says like the rocks will cry out for me, right? Like you can tell a mountain, jump into the sea, and it will. Like there's all of these incredible, like really strong pictures of God through nature and like worship in nature in the Bible. Especially if you imagine us living in homes that are like built on the earth, waking with the sun, like with the sun. Like imagine you don't have electricity and it's a full moon. Like it's going to be like an incredible event. Or the new moon, dark, deep nights. The new moon in dead of winter, different than the new moon in the middle of summer. And it does something to your energy. Like, even, again, my dad, who's a pastor, my mom, pastor's wife, they both know that on a full moon, things go crazy. Anybody that works in a preschool will tell you that on a full moon, the kids are crazy.
I can tell you that as a former high school teacher.
Yes, literally. It's just like we have, it has a direct effect on our energy, the gravitational pull of the moon. You know what I mean? Like, it's so very scientific. And it feels woo-wee, woo-woo, because we're just not used to it. But it's very scientific. And also because spirit is science. It just is, because it's fact. Science is simply fact about nature and things around us. Spirit is an inherent part of that. And I also do think that there's an aspect to which, like, everybody is unique. And we all, like, experience God and worship God in unique ways. And there should be room for that. I had a big kind of undoing of my faith. And then a rebuilding of it. And a lot of the rebuilding came through finding freedom in some of these areas and realizing, like, oh, I can worship God with these things as well. And it's simple stuff. It's literally simple things, but things like really appreciating the flow of nature and the cycles of nature and whatever else, and burning sage and like different little simple things, but just having freedom in it, not feeling like there were closed doors everywhere that I turned, you know? And it really, I've just always really connected to God through nature, and feeling like I'm not having to turn away from all of these things in nature, because it's demonic, is so freeing. And I think that some people, like, they could take it or leave it. And the point is that that's fine. The point is that you don't have to use a crystal to achieve peace. You don't have to look at the stars to know who you are. You don't have to, like, none of these things hold power intrinsic in and of themselves that you're looking to as a solution. They're all just aspects of, like, God's nature that we see in creation. They're all just, like, things that help us turn to him. And some people really, really, like, get off on reading the Bible, like, for lack of a better word. Like, some people, like, and I do too, like, I go through phases where I'm more or less, like, engaged by it, you know, but some people are really into, like, deep theological study. And to them, it's freedom and it's worship and it's beautiful. And I love that. And I like it. I enjoy it. Yes. But I also, like, I'm just different, you know, and other people really, really like systems and practices, like liturgy and repetition and things that are, like, structured. And they really thrive in that. And that's great. And I think that there's some beautiful examples of that, like Lutheran church and even Catholic church. I just think that there's a lot of beautiful expressions of worship.
Catholic church is so woo-woo.
Yeah. It really is. Like, they really believe that communion is actually the body and blood of the Lord.
Half of their services are full of incense and shit burned. And they're like, I'm not discounting any of this, but I was told multiple times that our statues of Mary were crying tears of blood that people had to wipe off. Like,
I know there is honestly some, like, wild claims in Catholicism. And again, I'm not, like, dissing it, but just saying, like, that sounds kind of wooey.
And also, like, chanting, like, having to continuous rosary. I pray the rosary so much. What's the difference between that and, like, some mala beads, you know? Exactly.
Well, and I think a big difference is that with Catholicism or with, well, we don't need to probably get into, like, Buddhism and all these other faiths and whatever, because I don't believe that they're all the same. I do think that they all have some value that we can, like, draw from. I don't think that they're all the same. It's just quite clear that they're not. But anyways, and that's fine. They don't have to be. But I think the difference is, like, where Catholicism says, oh, go to a priest. The priest will tell you what you need to do to be absolved by God. And then what it is if you say enough of the right words, then, like, ta-da, you're fine, you know? And that is just, like, that's not the purpose of that. Again, like, Jesus, his purpose was, there's freedom. You don't need anybody. Like, you don't need a conduit to come to me except for yourself. Like, you are the conduit. And I can speak to you directly. And this brings freedom. And you don't have to say a specific set of words to be absolved of your sin. I actually already absolved you. Like, ahead of time. And now anything that you do is about relationship. And is it bringing you closer to me or bringing you farther away from me? And sometimes, sure, like, saying a repetitive thing over and over again, what it does is it takes your mind out of it. So your heart and your soul can engage without having to think. Right. And you're just speaking truth over and over to yourself, kind of like the experiments with the plants where they say nice words to one and bad words to the other. And the one with the nice words, like, it's all happy and the other one dies. So it's like there's those kind of purposes for it. And it's beautiful. But it's not that the words in that you're saying to the rosary are your salvation. Right. Like, it's that the words are doing something within you that enables you to be closer to God and to be in closer relationship. And I think it's the same with so many of these things. Like, the crystal is not going to be your salvation. And if you're like, I have a toothache, let me grab my crystal, like, you know, then you're misplacing a little bit. But you also don't have to be like, I have a toothache, before I do anything else, let me pray and wait and see if God heals it. You can also just be like, oh, I know actually that clove is really good for toothaches, and so I'm going to shove some clove in there, you know what I mean? And then if it's still hurting, God, please, whatever. Point being, you're not going to a thing to say, like, that is the way, that's the salvation. The salvation is Jesus, and that's, like, set in stone. And everything else, like, is it bringing you into relationship or out of relationship, which ultimately, like, that's what sin is. It's just separation. It's just whatever makes a separation between you and God. It's whatever puts, like, blocks between you and your relationship with God. So even, and this is an area people will get funky about too, but even sometimes, like, what could be a sin for somebody might not be for somebody else.
I was just going to say that. This is why I say, like, I believe that our intuition as Christians is the Holy Spirit. When I see something, or I'm engaged in something, or I'm in an environment of some kind, and my stomach starts feeling a little wonky and, like, questionable, that's me being convicted. And that's not for me. And what is for me, using crystals and using essential oils when I'm doing my spiritual practices and when I'm reading my Bible and I'm doing my devotions, that might not be for someone else. Someone else might feel convicted in using crystals. And that's totally cool. Paul talks about how we're all convicted in different ways. We're all on different faith paths, and they don't all have to look the same. Just like our relationship, like, think about you. Like, you have so many different relationships with so many different people. I don't think Jesus wants us all to have the same type of relationship with him. On our own path, to pull out all of our individual gifts and to fulfill his purpose. And he's going to have a different design for all of that. For those listening, what resonates with you and what makes you feel like, I know when I was holding a crystal in one hand, my mala beads in another, when I was diffusing frankincense and patchouli, and I was using my mala beads to, like, repeat a verse that hit me that day 108 times, that's when I was brought to tears because I felt the tangible presence of the Holy Spirit. And I know that those things brought me closer to God. And if this makes you, if my freaking crystals make you feel a little bit like, and you noodle on it a little bit, and you're like, okay, is this my conditioning in the church, or is this the Holy Spirit? And you come to the decision that this is the Holy Spirit nudging me away, nudge away. Don't do it.
It is hard because, again, that's where discipleship comes in. Because you can't go, oh, actually, Susie did it like this and that worked for her, so you should do the same thing. Yes. And even you can't necessarily say, I'm going to recreate and do the exact same thing every day and try and, like, force an experience.
Yeah.
You know, I think another, you know, we are, like, experience seeking, some of us more than others. And I think sometimes we go searching for feeling and for experience instead of settling into the everyday and inviting God into the everyday, even when there isn't, like, big feelings. Mm-hmm. And I've felt that often, because sometimes it's easy to, like, you can manipulate feelings.
Oh, yeah.
You can orchestrate feelings. Like, and I don't think there's anything wrong. Like, I love going to, like, an epic worship service, and, like, everybody's in it together. I think it's so powerful when everybody is in a space with, like, the same mindset, like, declaring truthful things together and whatever. And I think music is extra powerful as a tool and all of that, you know, equally Again, I feel like I've gotten so much more boring in my old age because there's some music that I don't listen to. I can't listen to the same way that I used to. Or concerts that I would have gone to before, like freaking Future and Migos or whatever, you know, that I'd be like just going so hard. And actually, they're not as bad, but like whatever. Like the Travis Scott sometime, the whole thing that happened at his concert with the people dying and everything. And it just gave me such bad, 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 bad vibes. And I was like, I cannot, like, and his music gives me bad, bad vibes. Anyways, that as an aside, I've heard some people that are, like, deconstructing, being like, oh, worship music and worship services, they're just made to manipulate you into feeling like you have an experience with God, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, you can. Like, anything can manipulate you into a feeling for good, for bad, for ugly, whatever. But, like, also having been on the other side of some of those worship services, we're not sitting there going, like, if we repeat this a bunch of times, do you think maybe we can get everyone to think that they're feeling God? No, we're up there giving our all. At least if a worship quote unquote leader is like honest with themselves, they should be there as like humbly and bare before the Lord as they can. Like, and it is their role not to be special up there, but to be leading the way in like humility, to be leading the way in like, I'm going to get out of the way as much as I can and just try and make way for God's spirit. Put my heart in this place authentically so that other people can join in with that and feel a safe space to do that, right? And that's what a good worship leader should do. And it has that effect. And yeah, part of it is because everybody that you're with is like together doing the same thing, but like that's the point. And it doesn't mean that it's not real. It just means that we are very open to suggestion and it can go for one way or the other, which is why you have to be discerning. Which is why you have to be careful who you're around, what you're doing, and why you're doing it. Because you could sit there and chant something a billion times with your mala beads and just like, just to make yourself feel something and then be chasing a feeling all the time. You could chant anything probably with your mala beads. You could have no, like you could not know Jesus at all, not be interested, whatever, but like chant something a bunch of times, you'll feel something. Breath work is so real, like you'll feel something. And that's why it's all about the heart. And that's why, like, there's nuance. That's why nobody can really tell you. You have to go there for yourself. That's why spiritual maturity matters. That's why not being an island really matters. Recognizing as well that, like, if you are discovering God in some of these ways that feel a bit more woo-woo and whatever, which are beautiful, that you also are discovering God in your relationship with your spouse or when you're doing the dishes or in these ways that are very, very not woo-woo, like, very tangible, that are very, like, mundane. Yeah. Because it's all beautiful. Yeah. Every expression of worship is beautiful in different ways. We got to stay balanced. We got to stay mindful, very demure.
I loved all of that. And I know I need to move on because we're past our time. But the only two things that I wanted to point out, going back to science, you said everything that science can't work. This is why we are.
Yeah, I know.
No. You say everything science can't explain, God fills in. And I say everything that God has told us, science fills in.
Yes.
You and I are meeting in the...
Totally.
Meeting in the middle. My eighth grade science teacher in Catholic school was like, my friends talk to me and they're asking me, how can I have faith and be a science teacher? And I always say, science only further proves God. And that has stuck with me forever. And every time I'm like, how is the world created? So the Christian church and a lot of Christians have a hard time with the Big Bang. Scientists have been able to identify everything that happened like 0.00001 seconds after the Big Bang and nothing before. And the Big Bang created everything. Everything that was necessary to create the solar system, human life, like all of the things. But they can't figure out what happened the millisecond before. I think the Big Bang's legit. I think God did it. Like, I mean, that's so obvious to me. Like, God said, let there be light.
Big Bang happened.
And then there was. And it was a bang. And then everything else came after. That feels obvious to me. And I know I'm like harping on that, but you guys, it's not weird. Like,
such a great example.
Doesn't mean that God didn't do it. It means that we've figured out how
God did it after he said the words. You know what I mean?
No, I do. And I think it's a perfect example of what we're talking about, because it's something that has so much associated with it, like the Big Bang, those words, that like immediately upon saying it, people have opinions and people have ideas. But if you're able to set those aside and step back for a moment, like, again, I am not a person that like, I don't have like a strong profession either way, but I similarly to you, I'm like, I don't see why not. But like, so many people have it so closely associated with an evolutionary, Darwin's evolutionary theory, like all that kind of stuff, that they like really get tripped up over it. But it's just words, you know, it's really just words explaining something that we're trying to figure out. And again, it's like, why not? If anything, God caused it. And if the fact of the matter is, if they're like, oh, we think this happened, we just don't know why and we don't know how. And I've heard like people that are believers be like, it doesn't make sense for like order to come from chaos. And I'm like, totally, it doesn't. But that's something that God could do, you know, right? Like, why are we putting God in a box? I don't know. And I don't think we'll ever know. So it's okay to not be mad about it if people have different views. And it's also okay to not be scared when people say something like, I think the Big Bang was real in church, because you people immediately then jump to like, oh my gosh, she doesn't think that God created the earth, but God did it and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it doesn't mean any of that.
Let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Not be so reactive. And then the other thing that I wanted to say, similar to you in music, I was literally on my walk with Hawthorne this morning, going around my neighborhood, and how we're convicted by different things at different times. Going around my neighborhood and people are, I hate saying this, I never thought I would be this person, decorating for Halloween. I'm dressing up for Halloween. Hawthorne and I are going to be a dynamic duo. Robbie doesn't do Halloween. I did feel very, very, very odd that there were so many houses with like dead people coming out of the earth,
yeah, and
mummies hanging and swaying from the door frame, and like headstones with very sad looking women. It's what
the dark creepiness is like pretty extra. I similarly like have started to feel those kind of ways about it, and I celebrate. But I didn't growing up. We didn't do Halloween. We had a hallelujah party at church. But like, I've always loved dressing up, and it does like Samhain, like that. Like, it's one of those, like, it's pagan, but it's one of those marking the change of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked into the history of it a lot last year, you know, and it develops from one thing to another very quickly, sure. And there's spiritual beliefs behind it. But initially, a lot of the spiritual stuff behind it was Christian. And then it was like a mixture of Christian and pagan and like whatever. And I think that it, I don't know, like I'm down. I'm personally, as a believer, I also enjoy celebrating some of the holidays that are more focused around seasons. See, like just marking the change of time. Marking the change of seasons and entering a new kind of spiritual zone. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that day is particularly when the veil is thinnest or not. I don't freaking know. But I know that winter feels more like that in general going into it and whatever. Yeah, but I definitely don't want to celebrate it by uplifting or like glorifying darkness. And particularly, it is weird, things about dead rising and all that kind of stuff, because that particularly is not like, that's demonic or it's end times shit. And I don't think either needs to really be like, if, like, I just like wash myself with that energy, you know?
Yeah, I'm just going to decorate with pumpkins and some fall leaves and some like Harry Potter candles for my ceiling. And that's going to be my Halloween. Some flowers and such. The very last thing that I want to say that I didn't get to say earlier, but I meant to say, but we got on a tangent because we're made for each other. Is when it comes to a lot of these practices and Christian fear, especially all the things that I talked about, I like to put things up to, when we strip away the world, what has God left us with? And when people point to one of these things that God has left us with, herbalism, like, I'm just like baffled that people are like weird about me and essential oils and herbs. But when I come to one of the things that God has left us with, and someone calls me out on it and like calls me a heretic for it, I think the church that you're a part of, or the people that you're a part, I think this is man-made fear. You're fearful of this act at its root to pull you from God, because this is something of God that is meant to bring you closer, that is meant to show you his power and his like specificity in his creation, and is supposed to pull you from admiring the wonder and intricacy of his creation.
No, that's beautiful. And I think that with admiring and experiencing the intricacy of the beauty of God's creation, you also then experience and understand the intricacy with which you were created and the power that you have within that realm. It's really hard to control people that are aware of their value and their place in the intricate weaving of creation. And I do think, again, I am not a church hater. I do not hate organized religion. However, I think it's very problematic if it's not done well. And I think that historically, it has often become overtaken by need for power and control. And it's like undeniable. And a great way to control people is through fear, and by telling them that, like, oh, by just like putting boundaries on them, like super, super strict boundaries, so that they cannot discover for themselves some of these and take the power back into their own hands. When you understand herbs, you can heal yourself. And then you don't have to go to the priest or to the local male gynecologist or whatever it is. You know, like, I truly, truly think that a lot of like the women that were burned as witches, right? They were just women doing herbs and like loving the moon and doing things that were very naturally feminine. And yeah, when you discover that you actually have a direct link to God within yourself, and that you can embolden it and strengthen it and make it more rich through all of these things in nature, and use that for your edification and others as well, then it just puts so much power in your hands and makes it really, really hard for you to be controlled. And I think that is worth thinking about.
I don't think there's a better statement to end on. And what I want to say is, we have answered one question for my
part 5 podcast with Susie.
Before we end, I do have 5 fun questions for every one of my guests.
Ready?
Yeah. Adrenal mocktails. Are you coming out with a line of Ebby adrenal mocktails?
Like canned adrenal mocktails?
Oh my God. I like would love to do that. But I also feel like, one, somebody actually has done it. And two, like, it would be a disservice to like the simplicity of what it is. Cause like, why do I need to bottle and sell like orange juice and salt? But like, also, it's a good idea.
It is.
You post about it so much. You post about it so much in a good way, because I've always wanted to learn and you make it so simple. What is it? Don't tell me. Orange juice, salt, cream of tartar, water.
No, that's one of the ways you can do it. There's multiple ways.
And they're also, I've seen a lot of recipes that call for a fat that put coconut oil.
You can add coconut milk.
Yes.
Add collagen if you want. So like, there's a very basic, and then there's iterations of the basic one, and then you can add things kind of to it. You know, I'm really not opposed. And this next year is kind of, I'm thinking possibly the year about more tangible creations from me. I'm definitely exploring like what physical, like, because I'm definitely a creator in more than just like a content sphere. So this next year, I'm definitely going to be delving into, what can I actually put out to the world that is like my baby? What can I create? I am actually writing a book.
What kind of book?
I just signed a book deal. This may be the first place that it's being announced. No, I did announce it on my Substack, actually, to my Substack subscribers. Haha. Yes, it is okay to announce it here. Just here on the podcast, not on the stories. They have to listen till the end to get the info. Yes, I'm writing a book. It is essentially the basics of food as medicine, holistic things that I talk about a lot on my page. I won't share the working title just yet. But
no.
A combo of sort of recipes and information and whatever, very similar to like what I share, but just in book form. And I'm hoping there will be some illustrations from me and like beautiful pictures and whatever else. Very excited. It'll probably be 2 years until it's out though. So
that's how it is with books. Do you have the secret code to making friends in adulthood?
Oh, good Lord.
You had a lot of people at his birthday. Yeah, well, I'm mentioning myself.
Mark's family.
But no. But they're not all in Hawaii.
No, they're not all in Hawaii.
We didn't even talk about how you got to Hawaii. Look at us.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, secret sauce for making friends as an adult. Put yourself out there and like say yes to things. I think. Like say yes and just follow through. Like I think there's so many times that we don't take up an invitation to something because we're like, I don't know them that well. I don't know. Maybe it's weird, blah, blah. Or we don't ask somebody to do something because we're like, I don't know if they would like to, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you got to meet people first. So that helps, you know. But you'll find you meet people, especially if you have kids, at the park, at church if you go, at work sometimes. Like, you'll meet people and sometimes you just got to stick your neck out. And I think that we have been on the outskirts of community for a long time until we really just said like, okay, we're just gonna start saying yes. We're just gonna show up imperfectly. We're just gonna do it. Like, I'm having people over to dinner at our house on Thursday. Just like our whole kind of, there's like a community of people around here that all have little kids around the same age. We all went to someone's house for dinner because it was their like housewarming thing. We're like, oh, this is so fun. I was like, we should do this. Like, we should rotate around people's houses. And then I was like, I should follow through with that.
We used to do that.
Tuesdays, every different house hosted Taco Tuesday with all, we have 12 kids in our friend group.
Wow.
And you know, I think sometimes you just have to demystify it and not try and show up and not try and be perfect. Yeah. So I've thought about canceling a couple times. Last week we were sick and we did have to cancel. It was going to be last week. And I was about to be like, I can't do it this week. But I'm like, no, it's okay if I'm tired. I know how to make spaghetti. I'm going to make a vat of spaghetti. Come or don't come. Paper plates,
man.
The party comes in the guests. You bring the party. I'm not decorating. I'm not cleaning. I go over to my friend Nicole's house. She's like, don't. I'm like, I'm peeing in your room. She's like, don't judge my laundry. I'm like, I'm going to fold it for you. So like,
exactly.
All your friends are there.
Show up as you are and without judgment and just like be open and say yes, because we don't have time and energy for like faffing around with being fake.
Next question. Coolest part about home birth.
Wow. Coolest part about home birth. Everything.
Pick one.
Coolest part about home birth is being able to birth your baby into a welcoming and like comforting environment, and then not having to go anywhere. Being able to go from the birthing tub into my tub full of healing herbs while I ate bone broth that I made myself, and then get into bed and have chocolate cake freshly made that my sister and her niece and her daughter made for, you know what I mean? Just like home things that you can't have in the hospital. After you've given birth to a baby, you just want to be like comfortable and like secure. And so being able to do that just like transfers so smoothly from the birthing process into like a cocoon, just like whoop, was so nice.
I yearn for that. You have a lot of tattoos. Which one was the most painful?
Actually, I have this one that goes right across my wrist. That was really painful. And actually underneath on the like white, the like underside of my arm, was actually quite painful as well. But no, actually, I will say, you know what? The absolute most pain for a tattoo was I used to do like little stick and pokes on myself. My first tattoo I ever gave myself was with a needle stuck in the eraser end of a pencil with like some string tied around it.
Oh my God.
And I gave myself some little tattoos on my foot, but I did stick and pokes for a while. I eventually upgraded to getting like some tattoo needles from the internet. And I tried to do these two bands around my...
I did
all these on my fingers except for this one. A friend of mine did this, but this one is two black bands around my middle finger and the underside. I don't know if you can see, but it's like barely a shadow there. Underside of my freaking finger was the most pain that I've ever experienced.
And I tried real hard because I wanted it to be solid bands. And I, for one, could not handle the pain. And for two, they just disappeared. It didn't take the ink, which was also a bummer because I like painfully tattooed myself for as long as I could handle. And I was like, I'll go back to it. But it like the ink just like leached out of it. It was horrible. Do not tattoo the palms of your hands.
I can't believe you tattooed yourself for those first few tattoos.
I used to be so rock and roll.
I know. I looked at pictures that you post. I was
so punk.
What do you do with your period blood?
Ooh. You know what? At this point, nothing. And I feel kind of lame for it. I know. I would like to experiment with doing things with it. I would like to try the facial. I have yet to try that. I would like to try. I heard it's amazing. I would like to try putting it on my plants. I've heard that that is amazing. I struggled for a long time with the cup. Like I collecting it because I really struggled with using a menstrual cup. I couldn't like get it right.
Yeah.
I tried for a really, really long time. And then I had a baby and things changed. Whatever. I'm going to try again this time. Now it's like so light that it's basically non-existent, but like that will change. I'm going to try and then I'll get back to you on that because I would love to just paint my face in blood and like go out on the full moon and like dance around.
Get burned as a witch. Well, try the disc. Everyone says the disc is so much better if you can't, if your vagina is not meant for the cup shape wise.
Okay.
The disc for the facial. My cousin on my Cuban side used to do the facials and we were like, oh my God, it was totally her like weird witch stuff. But then I was like, there's tons of stains over there. Like,
yeah,
maybe you were onto something. It is odd. I don't know, we'll keep this in. No, the people will love it. Warning, it is like it's like warm and goopy, so yeah, just be prepared, it'll dry on your skin like a regular mask. But just be prepared for at first it being like warm and goopy. But I do, when I don't want to deal with that, I do water my plants with it. It's like filled with everything that fertilizer has.
Does it do you have nice plants? Are your plants happy?
Yeah, I just grew an eggplant.
With your egg blood? Wait, I was trying to make like a little pun.
with my empty egg blood. Yeah. Yeah. Empty egg lining. But yes, my figs are very happy, my fig plants. And then I did just grow a eggplant and my marigolds went wild. Every single one of them blossomed. I had to just pull a whole bunch out a couple of weeks ago and dry all the seeds, and I have to do that again. Those are all of my questions.
Good questions.
I want you to hang out with Zimri. Thank you for talking about Jesus with me for so long.
That was a really good talk. Sometimes it's really nice to just like talk about Jesus with somebody like-minded for a while. It's not often you get to do that. Thank you for holding this space.
Oh, thank you for being here. We will talk soon. It was so wonderful to see your face again.
I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Suzie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the woo-woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.